Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, if he was still alive, today would be the 120th birthday of the novelist, poet and playwright Samuel Beckett. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1969, yet still he remains to a degree a rather remote figure within the pantheon of famous Irish writers, which is a shame as he lived a hell of a life. Dr. Fergal Whelan is a writer. Good afternoon, Fergal.
How are you doing?
You met him once.
No, I didn't meet him.
You never met him?
No, I didn't meet him at all.
No. He was well got, would you say? Is it fair to say his background?
Yes, he very, very much so. He's from Fox Rock, and Brighton Road in Fox Rock. Quite a substantial house. And the house was built by his father, who was came from a family of builders. And built on a very large plot on the corner of Carrymount Avenue there. Was sold a couple of years ago. It was interesting. It was in Nama for a while. And then, so it was off limits for an awful lot of people. But it was sold eventually. Now it's a family house again, but it really is substantial. And whenever I bring people out to show them the shrine or whatever, the one thing they're all shocked of is just how wealthy the area is.
Yeah.
So they were a very well-got family, and not a literary family at all. I mean, when the father died, he had property all over Dublin and in the UK. They had a building business down on Green Street. And very much, well got, as I said, went to Portora Royal School, went to Trinity. His brother took over the business. He lived in Dalkey. So you can imagine, what the trajectory was there for him.
Yeah. And he didn't, when we in Trinity, was writing the immediate thing he wanted
certainly
to do? Because cricket, as I recall, was...
Absolutely. He got a pink, as they quaintly called him down in Trinity. He represented Trinity in cricket and in golf. Big golfer. Hugely interested, and spent quite a lot of time golfing down there. Played rugby as well for... played in the Ulster Schools Cup and had a trial with Ulster Schools. Very much that kind of, muscular, outdoorsy type. He had uncles who played rugby for Ireland, swimmers as uncles and all the rest. So that was really his main interest when he started in Trinity. But then he got more interested intellectually in various things. He got a gold medal in modern languages, was very interested in Italian, Spanish, French. And then was with an interesting group of people, dynamic times. It was the early 20s, so it's Free State, a lot of artistic interest going on. Was with a dynamic bunch and started writing there and really wanted to be a poet more than anything else.
Yeah.
Was having trouble with it, really. Some of his poetry is very obtuse, very obscure. After he left Trinity, he had a job in Trinity teaching, but he was on an exchange with Paris. They had a deal going there. So he was teaching over there and he was introduced to James Joyce. So that sort of did for him in a way, it convinced him that he wanted to be a writer, but also put him down a certain path, which sort of didn't suit him really, but he became quite a dense writer of elusive.
In what way did it not suit him?
I think in a way, he discovers later, he has a sort of epiphany that the way he's writing isn't what's inside him, because Joyce is very elusive, all sorts of allusions coming in from all over the place. He was taking all these notes on great works of literature, what he'd called himself later, demon note snatching. And working them into his works. Like the first novel he wrote, which was only published after he died, Dream of Fair to Middling Women, is very, very hard to read. It's very dense, a lot of allusions, but also unclear what he's actually at. And later on, of course, he becomes much more clear. He says he has an epiphany and he really writes what's inside. And
I read a difference between Joyce and Beckett is that Joyce put everything in, Beckett took everything out.
He took everything out, exactly, yeah. So when he was, following the path of the Joyce model, it certainly wasn't suiting him. And it was really a case of, I see, I have to go elsewhere to find what I'm doing myself.
And were they friends or were they kind of acquaintances in those circles in Paris at the time?
They were close, but it's a funny thing about Joyce and a lot of geniuses, I suppose, in a way, that Joyce used everybody he ever met. So, there are certain people say that Beckett was his his secretary, but he wasn't, but he helped him. He helped him write. Joyce's sight was failing, but he always got people to do research work for him. And there's an interesting, there's a thing down in Trinity, a document on cows, cow notes it's called, and it's on diseases in cows and backgrounds of cows. And they reckon that that was done for Joyce when he was writing Finnegan's Wake. So he was helping him.
Yeah.
And he's spending a lot of time with him. And of course, because of the force of his personality, he was drawing him in. Mm. And certainly Beckett was hugely impressed with him. And he was very impressed with Beckett as well. But it's always on Joyce's terms in many cases.
Yeah.
He fell out with him briefly because Beckett was going out briefly with Lucia Joyce, Joyce's daughter.
Yeah.
Who... she was more interested in him than Beckett was in her. It ended very, very badly. Joyce took exception to this as well, although he didn't treat his daughter particularly well either. You know, although
and she had her issues. As
she
well.
Did have yeah. her issues, yeah. you know, and she spent, unfortunately, she spent a long part of her life up to her death in an asylum in Northampton. Mm. And Beckett kept in touch with her and he used to send her very affecting letters. There's a few of them here in the National Library. He used to send her, you know, trinkets, and also I remember the Daily or the Saturday Evening Post, and things like that. So very sort of affectionate type of letter. So he really kept in touch with her when a lot of Joyce's own family weren't in touch with her, keeping keeping their distance.
Yeah. Did Beckett come back to Ireland much, or because one has the impression like he went to France and became kind of
he
more
didn't.
French, really.
Though. He sort of did. Yeah. There is a sort of one theory, you know, I deal with a lot of international scholars, of course, who keep on saying to me, well, there's two Becketts, really. There's the Irish Beckett and then there's the real Beckett. I nearly punched the guy for saying that to me once. But there is a sort of a trajectory where you say, oh, he went to Paris and he never came back. But he did come back, but he couldn't find his feet here. And really, you know, he was bouncing around between London. He was there for a couple of years as well. And then he was back here and back and forth. But he eventually, you know, hightailed it in about 1937. And although he came back to visit his mother in particular when she wasn't well, and he'd come back for funerals, great old Irish tradition, of course, he spent his time there. But weirdly, once he decided to cut, you know, the physical ties, is I think Ireland more and more becomes deeply embedded in his psychological landscape, really. You
know, yeah.
Becomes and, writing.
And during the war years, he was a member of the French Resistance.
He was.
Yeah. yeah. What did he do for
Very
them?
Seriously. There was a cell called Gloria, and they were working in relation to intelligence, passing it on to the Brits.
Mm.
And what he was doing was... encoding and writing for microfilm as well. So it's quite interesting that he was sort of doing specific type of work.
Yeah.
It was a small cell, but it was quite an important cell. They were eventually betrayed and some of them were caught and executed. He and his partner, who later became his wife, got out by the skin of their teeth with a couple of hours to spare, got out of Paris and made for Vichy, France, and ended up down in a place called Roussillon, down south. And while he was there living, he was, of course, he was he had an Irish passport and therefore was neutral. But he had a tough time down there, and really physically tough time. But then while he was down there, he made contact with the Maquis down there and was involved with them too. So he really put the effort in. He got the Croix de Guerre at the end for it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then when it was safe to return to France,
yeah.
that's... Now, you did mention his wife. Didn't he also had a kind of long-term mistress as well?
Well, no, he had several women that he was involved with.
Yeah.
You know, but he did have a long-term... Hard word to use, mistress.
I know, yeah.
It was, middle-aged men like us.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
No,
it's already judgy, yeah. But
he had a long-term relationship with an English woman called Barbara Bray.
Yeah.
Who worked for the BBC and was involved in the commission of a few of the early radio plays. She was a French scholar as well. But she was married with a couple of kids, and she left. I think their marriage was breaking down anyway, but she left and went to Paris to be closer to Beckett. And when she did that, although Beckett had been with his partner for such a long time, he got married to his partner at the very same time.
Ox, as the young people would
Ox,
say. Yeah,
I think. But certainly, yeah. But they had a long relationship, a long, very fruitful working relationship. When you can see in the correspondence that he was running things past her while she was actually writing as well at the same time and making suggestions. So very collaborative relationship. But certainly his wife, who tends to be written down a bit up until very recently, there's a few scholars writing about her now, very interesting woman who wrote herself, who wrote a music primer, was an excellent pianist, and certainly did a huge amount of legwork for him.
Mm.
In bringing his manuscripts around to publishers in Paris and really pushing the work so that he could actually survive.
Yeah.
So she's very much, heavily involved in his production as a writer.
The kind of classic picture where he's got the bit of a quiff and he's kind of looking very intently.
Yeah.
It's all a bit frightening.
Yeah.
He was funny, though.
So they say, absolutely. I mean, it's true. I've met plenty of people who've met him. And they all said he had a really, really good sense of humor.
Yeah.
I think that the starkness is interesting. I think he was aware of his own image.
Yeah.
And he was photographed quite a lot because what they say is he was very, very striking. He's a very tall man and spare and exceedingly, attractive. So he was aware of his own image, but also of being quiet about it. So, he understood the gaze. But I think he was quite silent in many cases in conversations because he really didn't want to talk about his work, but at the same time, quite funny in conversation with people he was relaxed with, dry and funny and really liked a good laugh. And there's a lot of humor in his plays and his works. I mean, a lot of really, really good gags.
Yeah, which is often overlooked. Because I remember reading a story, and it was for some Amnesty International campaign.
Yeah.
Where they wanted a photograph of him with a gag around his mouth. And apparently the people organising had sent him his long telegram asking him would he take part in describing what they wanted to do. And he just, his reply was, "I'm not again it."
Yeah,
going back to the Irishisms.
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't quite sure immediately whether that was a yes or a no or not.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But so he had a certain levity towards a lot of it. He, I think, genuinely didn't like talking about the work and didn't like academic, intrigue within the work and trying to unpick it. And his attitude always, and it's great, the more you actually study, I mean, this is my job, the more you study, you realise, it is all in the work. It's all there. And if it's not there, it's not there. And that was really his whole attitude. He was asked about, he'd get exasperated with actors asking about, where's this? What's this man's background?
Mm.
He says, I don't know.
No.
I really don't know.
Try and make it up. Fergal, thanks a million for coming in to tell us
all
today. That was Dr. Fergal Whelan there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.